Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and in this show, all four of my segments are recorded at the International Quilt Festival Spring 2014 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So it's really fun because I get to meet people who might have really busy schedules and can't come on the live show, or, you know, things like that, that, you know, it's easier to talk to them in person. Maybe they're from another country. But I am really excited to have Frances Newcomb from Art Gallery. She is a designer with Art Gallery Fabrics and just has a beautiful palette, beautiful set of designs, and she has a great background that it's going to be fun to learn about. So, Frances, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Pat, for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, it's so fun to come to market. Had you come to every one?
I've come, this is my third one.
Okay.
So I'm really excited, and I'm launching my second collection called Cherie in this market. And I'm really excited about this collection because it's very versatile.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful collection of grunge, type, and florals.
Yes.
And I think it's really appealing to a lot of people because it has the old world look to it, but a modern flair. So.
And tell me the colors in that particular one.
It has the teals and the pinks and the grays and the blacks and whites.
Yeah.
And it has a touch of the, you know, the teals and then raspberry.
Yes.
Which it's got pop of color. So it's a low volume with pops of color. So it blends nicely with solids and different blenders.
Now, I want to tell people a little bit about your background, because some people come into designing fabric as a quilt maker like I did. I made quilts, and I'm like, okay, I want my own fabric line. But you are an artist. You come. Your background is different, and so you come at the fabric making a little bit differently. Tell me a little bit about your background.
Well, I grew up, my father is a famous composer named Lalo Schifrin, and he writes famous television music scores. So I grew up in Hollywood. He's best known for Mission Impossible. Yes, everyone knows the Mission Impossible theme. And so I grew up in Hollywood, and my family very much encouraged the arts. And so I was very artistic growing up because I have his genes.
Yeah.
So I went to art school and all that. And then when I graduated college, I fell right into television graphics design. So I'm very technically skilled in all the... I'm a motion graphics designer.
Okay.
So I do animation.
Wow.
And I work at NBC, and that's my day job, and I do this on the side, and have a three-year-old, so everyone thinks I'm crazy, but which I am.
Yes. High energy.
High energy. Yeah. So, yes, I'm very technically skilled in all the computer programs, and I've loved quilting at the same time. That was the thing I escaped with my high-pressure job, and when I first got married, there was a local quilt shop, and I started quilting and sewing and fell in love because it took away some of the stress of my daily, but fell in love because there's like a little girl side of all of us who love this art form.
Yeah.
And I love embroidery and cross-stitch and piecing. And I tend to like quilts that are more representational. Like I love the applique and those kinds of things that really touch my heart. And anyway, so it was years that I was doing this. And then one day I sort of fell into this fabric design, and it made sense. It popped in my head. Why didn't I get into this earlier? Because I kind of came late in life, you know, doing this. And I fell in love, and I experimented for a couple of years, drawing and painting, scanning into the computer.
So because you were making quilts and you knew that you had a technical background and you're an artist.
Right.
So you're like, oh, I could maybe do the pieces you were missing or the pieces you really wanted to work with? Did that sort of pop into your head? It's like, oh, I'd really like to have this kind of a fabric, but I'm not seeing that in the market.
No, you know, I'm so in love with... I wanted to do children's book illustration, and I love illustrating and drawing and painting.
Yeah.
And I'm so good with the digital computer. And I spent a couple years really experimenting different techniques. I mean, I love to do novelty and modern and floral.
Yeah.
I'm versatile.
Yeah.
And but I wrote to to Pat Bravo because she's from Argentina. My father's from Argentina.
Oh.
So I told her who my father was, and she says, I want to see your work. And I got so nervous.
Oh.
But so excited. And I spent a week, day and night, not sleeping, putting together a portfolio. Because I really didn't have a fabric design portfolio.
Right.
I had a motion
right.
graphics portfolio.
Right.
But I also sent a photo of myself with my family. That helps.
Yeah.
Because when people see who you are and
right.
they... You know, it kind of helps.
It's a real person.
As a real person, I think if people are trying to get into this business, it helps to show who you are as mm-hmm. well as what you've sewn, as well as your designs.
Right.
So that really, I think that is a good tip. So I also showed me. And so I showed her, and then I didn't hear back. And the nerves, you're like falling off your chair for like a week or two. But she wrote back and said I'd be perfect for her company.
Yes.
And and of course I had to, you know, it's like anytime you still have to pay your dues a little bit.
Yeah.
Even though I'm a seasoned, you know, a little bit older, seasoned person, seasoned artist, mm-hmm. you still entering a new business, and even if you know design so well, because that is my trade,
mm-hmm.
you still have to kind of be trained a little in the new, in fabric design.
Right. Right.
And so I spent 7 months with her before she launched and I had many, many, many designs, and she didn't launch me when she was supposed to, and that was hard.
Oh.
So not everyone gets, you know, make it right up front,
right,
you know. But I came back from market and I designed Safari Moon.
Mm-hmm.
And she loved it.
Oh. Yeah.
And because it was different.
Yes.
It wasn't something people were seeing. And mm-hmm. It was not a floral collection. It was an exotic, mm-hmm. not Africa, but a
right.
whimsical take yes. on Africa.
Yeah.
And a modern take. And
yeah.
I looked at a lot of fashion African prints and this and that. And when people saw it, they were like, that's not Africa. That's a fun children's book, Africa.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah.
to me, that's kind of who I am, is I can represent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So so that's how it happened for me.
So I think it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about how you know, because you draw a lot, you have a lot
yes.
of ideas, and you're
yes.
so versatile that you can create all these different things. When you decide to narrow it down for your fabrics, maybe talk about Utopia.
Okay.
How did you start the line Utopia? Now, this is in the stores now or coming
no,
very soon?
No, this is coming out in October.
And October.
Cherie comes first, and we switched it because originally Utopia is kind of interesting. In some ways, you know, I think the... Can I say this? It's
yeah.
very interesting.
Yeah.
I think that our trade is changing
mm-hmm.
because... you know, Pat and I discussed this a lot, and she felt a lot of people think, oh, you have to have one style, and that has been the way that this industry has been kind of, and I've sort of fought her on it and said, why can't I be versatile? You know,
mm-hmm.
why,
mm-hmm.
why? And she finally let go and said, yeah, okay, let's do it. You
mm-hmm.
don't, nothing has to be the same. And because our industry is changing so much and it's becoming very different these days.
Yeah.
And with technology and everything. So anyways, I had started Utopia and then also designed Cherie. Then I, at the last minute, switched.
Ah.
Because we felt that Utopia was closer to Safari Moon in style,
mm-hmm.
and Cherie is so different.
Yeah.
So, but starting with Utopia, you know, I'm someone who experiments a lot. So it's not always... You know, I think as an artist,
mm-hmm.
everyone struggles. Some people are weak with blenders.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are weak with the main print.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm strong with the main print.
Yeah.
But the blenders are an exercise. and Pat would, you know, you need to work with your blenders, you know. So it's you have to really, that's one of the parts of being trained in fabric design. You have
mm-hmm.
to make a cohesive collection that works
right.
all together.
Yes.
And you may struggle. You may come up with the first big idea of the print,
mm-hmm.
the main print.
Mm-hmm.
But those blenders are really important. They're just as much have to say a voice and work
mm-hmm.
with it without competing.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be a struggle. Utopia was a little more of a struggle than Safari Moon.
Yeah.
But
And when we talk about blenders, let's describe them for people who may not use the same terminology. It'd be like more like the tonals, something small scale prints.
Yeah, the small scales.
Where it's tone on tone or not so many colors in it.
Yes.
So that it not, may not read solid from a distance, but it'll read more of a solid sort of color.
Yeah, one of the things that my theme, shall we say, mm-hmm. is that fabric design has to tell a story. Mm-hmm. Okay, and mm-hmm. I love it because I study children's books.
Yeah.
And what happens is that this fabric designer has to tell a story with her prints, yeah. and then the quilter, in turn, takes those prints and makes their own story,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So those little tiny prints need to flow with the main print and tell the story. You mm-hmm. know, so if you're making a world of a city, mm-hmm. for instance, mm-hmm. Utopia, then the birds, do they fly over the city? What are the birds doing, the little tiny birds, you
yeah.
know? Are they part of the, you know, because birds are very popular.
Yeah.
But you can use your imagination. And I think that's so important. Like, when you're making a little tiny print that blends, you know, or whatever the terms you're saying, you know, mm-hmm. like the one on yeah. the tone on tone or whatever, whatever it's textural, even if it's textural, it should tell a story. It mm-hmm. should combine... Mm-hmm. And you should be able to want to turn the page to get yeah. to the next one, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that. And things might have like a grid work, like the one piece in here has mm-hmm. a little bit of a feel to me of grid work or mm-hmm. or brick work even. So mm-hmm. if you're a city, like Utopia, mm-hmm. you might have buildings, and that might be how I interpret
yeah,
that
fabric. Yeah, that's great. That's great. I mean, I looked at a lot of Danish modernism and... You know, a lot of designers, I think they look at what inspires them, you know, as far as people who like retro or vintage or modern mm-hmm. or whatever, they'll look at works. I like to look at works of art that, you know, that inspire me before I start something. And I do a lot of research mm-hmm. before I start a collection. So mm-hmm. with, you know, the Safari Moon, I looked at a lot of African prints, photos of Africa, even Utopia. You know, I looked at modern Danish modern. I looked at Marimekko. I looked yeah. at a lot of things that were interior design, mm-hmm. City, you know, animals. And with that in mind, that's how you start. And you think of textures. What are the textures? Mm-hmm. What are mm-hmm. the colors? What are the, you know, but sometimes it's not easy, I think, for people to...
Right.
You have to keep researching and inspiring yourself.
This has been so great. This has been so great. Thank now, how you. Can people find you online?
If you Google Sewing Belly Buttons Boutique.com, you'll find me. Just look up Sewing Belly Buttons Boutique.
And if they put your name in, will it sort of go
yes,
there? Yes,
Frances Newcomb. And yeah. Frances is spelled with an E.
Yeah, and Newcomb is N-E-W-C-O-M-B-E.
Yes.
Yeah, so they can go out. And do you blog?
Yes, I blog.
Okay,
yes.
Good. And so they can go read about it.
They can go read it, and yes.
Kind of get a picture into your world.
Yes, and I love any interaction. If people are interested in sewing something or, you know, I love that.
Yeah, send you pictures.
Send me pictures of what they're making. That makes me really happy.
I know. Isn't it awesome to see your fabric made into
something
by a
quilter? That's why we do this.
Yes,
this is why we do this,
yes. You're so creative, yes.
Yes.
Oh, this is wonderful. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much. This is a big pleasure for me.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, rotary cut several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I am your host, Pat Sloan, and I am here at the International Quilt Market Spring in Pittsburgh, still collecting up designers to talk to in person. And it's always fun when people come in from other countries, because then I can get them, in person versus talking on Skype or the phone, making them get up really early in the morning to talk to me on the radio usually. So Gail Pan is here of Gail Pan Designs, and Gail's talked to me before, but she has some really new things going on since we last chatted. Being 10 years in business, Gail, that's wonderful.
Yes, I'm pretty excited and very, very happy that I've got this far.
Yeah, 10 years is like great. I mean, it's a huge milestone. You should have a big party.
Well, I should, but I don't think I have time.
Yeah, that's always the way.
Yeah, I'm quite busy.
Now, you have a couple of really great things going on at this trade show. You have a book that just came out, and you have a fabric line. Let's first talk about the book, because that's actually in print, so
yes,
people can purchase it. So tell me the title and a little bit about it.
Okay, it's called Patchwork Loves Embroidery, and it's got 15 embroidery projects, so it's pretty projects to do by hand, and it's published by Martingale, so yes, I'm very happy to be with them. And it gives a range of projects, from small projects like needle case and pincushions, right through to a wall quilt and table runners and bags. So there's quite a variety of simple projects that I think that are achievable.
So for your embroidery, let's talk a little bit about technique for what you do. Do you have a technique section in the book for how you do your embroidery?
Yes, at the beginning I'll talk about the needles I like to use, okay, and how to use the hoop and the fabric and also the thread, and because I like to use a variety of thread. So I talk about using what I use and what I like to use, but really it's up to individual. But, you know, just a few pointers to get you started,
right,
if you are a beginner.
So do you mix, you just mentioned threads, so do you mix threads within a single project?
Not usually.
If I
pick a thread to use, I will stick with that brand of thread, even though I might use different colors, but usually not in a project.
So what weight thread for your embroidery do you like to use?
I like to use the 12 weight Aurifil is my favorite thread from that range. And then I go to, I don't usually use an 8, I would use an 8 for quilting, for hand quilting, because I've hand quilt a lot, right down to like 2 strands of embroidery floss.
Okay.
You know, or...
And that would be maybe for fine lines on your embroidery?
Yeah, yeah. So...
Now, if someone hasn't done embroidery before, what in your book would be like a good starter project in there?
Well, there's a little needle case in there that has a few basic stitches on it, and it's very little, and then... Once you've done that, you can easily put it together. So I always tell people to start with something small so that they can feel a sense of achievement when they've finished it be proud of their work. And then they can work their way through to the pin cushion or the little pin cushions and then up to the table runner.
Yeah, the bigger, more expansive project.
Yeah, that might take a little bit longer.
Yeah. So your style is a more open design. It's very cute and sweet. I just love your drawings. When you're starting embroidery design? How do you start? Do you do sketches? Do you go to the computer?
No, it's all done by hand. So I might sit in front of the television one night just sketching and coming up with an idea. And usually I try to think, do I have something specific I need to do, like a table runner, and then I'll start drawing.
Okay.
And just, yeah, it's sketching. I've got lots of sketches all over the place. And sometimes I'll just, oh, where is that sketch? I need it. But, yeah, I just work on size, how big I need a project to be, and and then start to fill in the blank, basically. But it's all hand-drawn.
Hand-drawn. Oh, that's really nice. I mean, so that gives that whole feel of your personality on everything that you've done. So do you have to... Do you do like little pencil sketches and then sort of go into your final that you can trace off?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So there's quite a few layers of what I do. So I might start with a bird and then I'll sketch a few things around it and then I'll move on and retrace again. Or I might get a little bit done and I love that bit and then I'll photocopy that so I don't have to keep tracing it and then I'll add to it. So that's a quick way for me to not retrace half the design. So I just photocopy it a couple of times and then add a few things and see what works till I get to the final design.
Oh, that's really cool. I never thought of that. That's a, you're a clever girl.
Anything that saves time.
I tend to draw little bitty things and then go to the computer to draw real size, so I don't have that layering, so I can work a little bit different for drawings. But that's really, now you also do single patterns besides books.
Yes.
And can people buy, where can they buy them in the U.S.? I mean, you're Australian designer, but they're available here.
Yes, they are available here. I have quite a few stockers that are listed on my blog from the U.S. So, and I find as each year I come, I just get a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. So, So I have that all on my blog under USA so that people can look. But I also, and, you know, if people email me, I'm always very happy to find out where they are and where their closest shop is.
Oh, that's nice of you. Yeah, that's... helpful because people, it'd be easier to buy in the U.S. maybe. So.
Yes.
Now, when you're doing embroidery, go back, because you incorporate patchwork and embroidery.
Yes.
But for the embroidery part, do you ever, like, sometimes people will put, like, a fabric or batting on the back of the fabric that they're actually doing the embroidery on to hide the threads or hide the knots. How do you work?
I just use a very lightweight interfacing that is fusible.
Okay.
So once I've traced my project, then I can iron that onto the back, and then that will hide the threads and any knots that I do.
So you embroider first and then fuse it?
No, fuse it after you've traced and then you embroider.
Okay, so that way you have an extra layer.
Yes, and that way too, if the embroidery fabric is a bit soft, then it just gives it a bit more body. It's a bit more easier to embroider with then.
I would like that, because sometimes they're too soft and don't they pull up?
Yeah.
So you would get sort of wrinkly.
Yeah, and then you can see through a lot when they're very flimsy as well. So
yeah. Do you, what type of base do you like to draw on? Is it always solid? Will you use prints?
No, I love to use prints or a spot. Mm-hmm. So I do use a lot of spot and I use a lot of prints. So just a very subtle print in the background. So the and especially if I'm doing like something Christmas, I'll use a little star print in the background. So it's a very subtle Christmassy look. So, you know, and if I'm doing flowers and birds, I would use a little flower in the background. So just gives a little bit more interest.
Right. And those would be more tonal, like tone on tone?
Tone on tone, yes.
Right. So you wouldn't have like a big blue, you know, bird on the background fabric.
No. Yeah.
So that would be too intense for your drawings.
That's right. Yes.
So speaking of fabric, tell us about your fabric line with Red Rooster.
Well, my first fabric line is called Baskets in Bloom.
Yay,
and it's showing now at Spring Market, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
And I have got advanced yardage, so I have been making some projects.
Yay.
So I've got 19 fabrics in the range, so quite a bit of blue. But the main feature is it's basket print, so designed a few quilts around baskets. So I do love baskets.
No, you have to have baskets.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I am like a basket person. I'm like, give me a basket.
I've done some applique quilts with it, but also some embroidery, table runners, bags, things like that. And I have got a couple of tone-on-tones in there that I requested so I could stitch on them.
Right, so you could actually stitch on them. Yes. Oh, that's so wonderful.
Yeah, so it's very exciting.
Now, your work is a little bit more on, it's sort of muted. you know, so your colors are not brilliant,
clear
colors. They're just a little bit muted. And what's your favorite palette right now?
Well, my fabric at the moment.
Oh yes, but, that would be it.
But really I love blues, like muted blues, greens and reds. Mm-hmm. Sort of that's my really, the three go-to colours that mm-hmm. I would use. And then I use a lot of thread work in my embroidery. So I find then that they all fit in with the red thread. I do, mm-hmm. my favourite colour is blue, so I do a couple of blue work pieces. But I do find the red then works in with that muted, muted sort of blue-green-red work.
When you're designing the patterns, you know, any quilt, you know, do you do the embroidery first and then the patchwork part, or do you have a vision for the whole thing and sort of know what the patchwork part will be?
Sometimes both.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes I'll have an idea for a big quilt and then I'll think I need an embroidery to go on there, where will I put it? Or sometimes I'll draw three or four little embroideries and then work the quilt around that, depending on how big it needs to be. So I work both ways, whatever mm-hmm. happens. I just let it flow.
Mm-hmm.
So I just let, hopefully the ideas come and I can just go, that's it, that's what I need. And sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes I have to leave it and come back to it later and let it speak to me and sort of say, this is what it needs to be.
Now, when you came to the U.S., you know, it's a big trip. A lot of Australians, when they come to the trade show, also include some travel to local guilds or local shops, and you did that this time.
Yes.
So where did you visit?
So I visited Kellyanne's Quilting down in Warrenton in Virginia.
Near my house.
Yeah, I didn't know I would have come to visit. So that was a fabulous shop. So we had a nice little group of ladies that I taught embroidery to. So we did just a little project with 9 embroidery stitches on it. And we had a great day. It was great. And Kellyanne was a wonderful, wonderful hostess. So I really enjoyed that.
It's a cute little town, too.
Yeah, and the town is gorgeous, you know, and the shop was lovely, and of course I left a little bit lighter with my wallet.
Will you take time off on these long trips to see another part of the United States, or do you end up and you need to go home?
Well, I've actually been here 2 weeks before market, so we've done a little side trip to Niagara Falls and down to Amish country in Lancaster, so a little bit of a holiday beforehand. Because mm-hmm. I find after market, I'm just too tired. I need to go home.
Yeah.
So, and I will hit the ground running when I get home because I have a lot of things on. So.
Yeah, it sort of makes sense then to do a little bit of trip ahead of time if you've got your stuff, all your work done for the trade show.
Yes.
Some of us, we can't do that.
It's could have had another week, but that's the way it worked out. And my girlfriend who's come with me, she wanted to see a bit of the country and I was happy to go along for the ride.
Did you like the Amish country?
I did. Yes, it was lovely. It's very serene and just really just comforting and nice and relaxing.
And did you go see some quilts, like the old Amish quilts at all while you were there?
We only had a day there, so we did a little bit of shopping bit of sightseeing. We went some bridges and a few back roads.
Oh, there, that's my sort of old stomping grounds. My grandparents and great-grandparents were in the Lancaster area.
Beautiful
there.
Area.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful.
Oh, now, where can people find you so they can, could you blog and they can, follow you?
Yes, I'm on Instagram at Gail Pan Designs, and I blog at gailpandesigns.typepad.com. And I'm also on Facebook as Gail Pan Designs.
So pretty much you can put Gail Pan Designs in and
hopefully
you'll
come up and you'll find me. So I love to have lots of customers come and see what I'm doing and lots of ladies to be inspired by my work. So
wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's great to see you again.
I know. It's so great to catch up. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit American Quilting Magazine at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me, Pat Sloan, at patsloan.com, and you can come back next week for all new show.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. If you're working on more than one quilt project at a time and have limited storage space, stash each ongoing project in a large white gift box. label the ends, and stack the boxes in your closet.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am still here at the International Quilt Market, the trade show in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And it's springtime, although it feels very chilly here still. And I am so excited because the Ulfa Company is having their 35th anniversary of the design of the rotary cutter. And it's just amazing. I think it's the greatest tool ever invented for us quilters. You know, can you imagine having to still cut everything with scissors? I can't. So Robin Letourneau, who is the brand manager and marketing, works in marketing for Ulfa, is here. And she's going to tell me a little bit about the company background, how the cutter was designed. So, Robin, thanks for being here and putting on such a really cool display today for us.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me.
Now, I would like to kind of have you tell me where the rotary cutter was designed, how it was designed, because it has such a great story.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Ulfa is a Japanese company, and so the founder of Ulfa in 1979, just yeah. a few years ago, 35 to be exact, was watching a television program, and he was watching a tailor, and he was working with a very delicate material, and he just had these enormous, you know, shears.
Yeah, those big tailor scissors,
right?
Yeah.
Cutting the material, and he was watching the program, and he thought to himself, there has to be a better way.
Yeah.
And so from that, he invented the rotary cutter in order to be used with fabric.
Now, what is his name?
Yoshio Okada.
And did he have another company already?
Ulfa was already in existence, the company Ulfa. In 1956, Mr. Okada also invented the snap-off blade. So if you've ever seen a utility knife in a Home Depot or Lowe's with the snap-off blade segments, that was his invention as well. So the company of Ulfa was already in existence.
Yeah.
And then he just continued inventing. He was an inventor at heart.
Yeah.
And Ulfa is still a family-owned company based in Osaka, Japan.
And where is that in Japan? Is, you know, like middle of the country or?
Southern.
Okay, southern part of the country. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, now, from the inception of his, we got to see the cool prototype, which is just like, you know, like a block of wood and some, you know.
It looks more than 35 years old.
I know. Now, did he take a long time to put that into production? Do you have any idea of the length of time?
No, it was a very quick process. Mm-hmm. I looked up the patent information, and it was a very quick process from when he developed it to when they got the patent approved for the design, and then they started distributing it first in Japan, and then as the company grew and experience, you know, and all the demand for it grew, they started distributing it out to other countries. So it's sold across the world right now.
Yeah, and it is my personal favorite, the Ulfa rotary cutter. You know, I really, really feel, I think the ergonomics are wonderful, and they have changed. We are sitting here with three different type of styles, because you still make multiple styles, right?
We do. We still make the original styled handle, which is the straight handle, and it's flat on the top and the bottom. Mm-hmm. Then from there, they created the ergonomic handle, which is kind of a curved handle, and it has the squeeze handle.
Yeah, sort of like a trigger.
Right. When you squeeze the trigger, the blade comes forward, and you can lock it closed, which is a great safety mechanism.
Yes.
And then just a few years ago, they came out with a straight handle, but it's much more, I won't say ergonomic, but it's curved and contoured, so it fits really nicely in the palm of your hand. Mm-hmm. And the really great benefit with these newer cutters is we've got a quick change blade change mechanism on the back.
Yeah. Yeah, that is like a miracle.
Yes, and yeah. The washer, the net, laying the pieces out side by side, you don't have to mess with that anymore. You just click a little trigger back, change the blade, and then click it back in place.
So how many of them have the quick change part of it? Just that one style?
We have two styles right now.
Okay, with a quick change.
Right, and we have it in 45 millimeter and 60 millimeter.
And what other size of rotary cutters do you make?
The smallest size is an 18 millimeter, so it's just a teeny tiny little baby blade.
Oh, my goodness.
And then we also have a 28 millimeter. The 45 millimeter is the most popular. That's what we've got in the most handle styles, and that's what you'll see probably, in the most places. And then we also have the 60 millimeter. Mm-hmm. And the 60 millimeter is actually not just used for quilting, but we sell a lot of 60 millimeter to the industrial segments as well, part of the world where they're cutting awnings, for creating boats or upholstery or boating for their cushions and their sails. So it's very interesting how we use it for a very specific process, but there are other people that are using it for completely different.
Now, I understand that the blades themselves are also, it's like, okay, there's the blade, it's a razor blade. But that's a very fine-tuned instrument as well that was designed and is handcrafted and manufactured with great precision.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about the blades and why they're sort of like they are?
Sure. Depending on the size of the blade, most of our blades are carbon tool steel, and it's a very high-grade, premium-grade Japanese tool steel that they purchase in Japan. Mm-hmm. And then we have a few blades that are also stainless steel. So our small 18-millimeter blade is, or the decorative blades with the pinking edge or the scallop edge, those are also stainless steel blades. Mm-hmm. And they go through a very complex honing process to just get that perfectly sharp edge on it. So it's very interesting.
Now, the company here, you're sort of the North American distributor, exclusive distributor.
Correct.
You're still named Ulfa, but
right.
And you have what? How many people do you have here that work for Ulfa?
We're a very small, tight little team. So there are three of us in the marketing department, and Ulfa, like I mentioned before, the snap-off blades in Home Depot and Lowe's. So I have a counterpart who covers all of our professional construction, industrial sales. I handle all of the craft and quilting sales, and then we have a manager over us, and that's just our little marketing team right there. We also have a few other people, but in total in the U.S., there's only about a dozen Ulfa employees, and we handle all of the sales and marketing in the U.S. and in Canada.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
You're very busy.
We like to keep busy. We don't get bored.
And here at the trade show was fun because you had a lot of members of the team. You had a graphic artist here.
Yep.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about what she does.
She's been with the company, I believe, 17 years. Uh-huh. And so she just has so much history, so much. As we were laying out, we had a display this morning where we laid out all of our old discontinued products from, the inception. And she kept looking at it, I remember designing that. And I remember designing that. It was a walk down memory lane.
And what's her name?
Leah Lawson.
Yeah. I talked to her for a little bit, and she was saying how, it's fun to look back at the old packaging and look forward. Now, you also have, besides the rotary cutter and the blades, you have mats and rulers, and where are those all designed?
Those are all also in Japan.
Yeah.
Yep, everything comes from Ulfa in Japan. So our mats are really great, the self-healing mat. So your blade actually cuts through the mat, and then the mat heals itself. Helps keep your blade sharper for longer. You've got that soft surface that you're cutting into, and, and the rulers have the frosting on the back.
Now, you've been talking to people. You've done, shows like this, which are for the trade, and then you also have been at consumer shows where you're talking to the quilters who use your tools. Mm-hmm. What kind of fun things have people told you a little bit about, when they first saw a rotary cutter? Do you have any kind of stories that are cool?
Yeah, I was just talking this morning. A woman came by and said that she had her first quilt, and it was before the rotary cutter. And when she pulled it out, she also had all of these. She had saved her cereal boxes to cut out the templates and the shapes. And she still had all of the templates from that first quilt, and it was a sampler quilt. So they're quite quite a few templates that she had together with that. And a number of other people have told me that when they first got their rotary cutter, they knew they didn't have a mat.
Right.
But they knew they didn't want to cut on their dining room table. And so they loaded up plywood or newspaper, but very inventive, right? Trying to find the solution for what to cut on.
Yeah, I'm lucky that by the time I learned to quilt, I learned to quilt in a store who carried mm-hmm. the Ulfa products. So I got the mat and the rotary cutter, you know, and that's what I started out with. So I got, I think, the best tool set, you know, to start with. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I've been with Ulfa for almost 8 years now, and, mm-hmm. you know, I'd always sewn and, you know, 4-H and all of those fun things and like to make my own clothes. And then I got this job and I thought, all right, I'll try that quilting thing out. And now I'm hooked, and my husband yells at me, you know, I've got closets full of fabric. And
<That's>
but
good.
I can't imagine starting, you know, because I started with great tools and you know, these great processes and designs. Mm-hmm. So it really was easy to get into it and to fall in love with quilting.
Yeah, yeah. It makes it so much better when you have the right tools to do the job. Now, for the anniversary, you're planning a few fun things all during the year, not
yes.
just here at the show. Tell me a couple of things going on.
Well, you know, we just had AQS a couple of weeks ago, and mm-hmm. so we had a lot of fun at AQS. We sponsored all the classrooms, so all the classrooms had Ulfa mats and cutters and rulers,
oh.
and we're going to continue that sponsorship through AQS, the rest of the classes and their shows that they have throughout the year. Here at Quilt Market, we had a breakfast to kind of just celebrate. We gave goodie bags away with disco balls
yeah.
in them and Twix bars, all things reminiscent of 1979.
Yeah.
And then in the future, over the summer, we're going to be reaching out to designers and asking them to help us create an anniversary sampler quilt. And we just love it for designers to create a block that just embodies what the past 35 years of quilting has meant to them. And then to share that block with us so that we can create a full quilt and then unveil it at Quilt Market in the fall.
Oh, in Houston in the fall.
Yep.
Yes. Ah, that will be so cool.
I can see it in my yeah. mind, and it's beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. Now, do you have a consumer area that people can go to learn more about what Ulfa has?
Yep, you can go to our website, www.ulfa.com. We're redesigning that, so in another 60, 90 days, it's going to have a completely new look, very mm-hmm. refreshed and very consumer-friendly. And then we're also on our social media, so Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, Twitter.
Yeah.
We're out there, so come yeah. find us. And we love to hear stories of what people are using our mm-hmm. tools for. You know, I've created this, or I found this neat trick, or I have a tip. Those types of things are just so valuable for us.
Now, do you have one sort of maybe place that you'll be in the future that people could see you? Do you do a consumer show, a retail show?
We have a vendor who, Charlie is his name, and he goes to a lot of the consumer shows, and
okay.
he's just such a great ambassador for us, and he's been doing it for so long, he's got tons of knowledge.
Yeah.
And so we really let him take the reins there, but he'll be at a number of the consumer shows coming up.
Oh, so people might find an Ulfa booth, and they'll
yes.
meet Charlie.
Yes, and he's a very fun, eccentric,
yeah.
you know, kind of guy.
This has been so wonderful. It's so great to be able to talk to you here on the year of the 35th anniversary of the Rotary Cutter.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's been great. Thanks for having me.
So everybody should go out and visit Ulfa and check them out, and be sure you try their Rotary Cutters.
Yeah, and stay in touch.
Stay in touch. This is Pat Sloan. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once fabric pieces have been pressed, let them cool in place before moving them. It prevents distortion of bias edges.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am here still at the Spring Quilt Market in Pittsburgh, where I'm, you know, interviewing designers and in person. So it's always more fun for me to be able to hook up and talk to somebody in person versus always just on the show, on the phone. And I contacted Thomas Knauer earlier and said, you know, do you have some time? Because Thomas is actually living in England right now. So he does, and he's here with me now. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Ah, so exciting. So exciting to see your work. It's just, I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
Yeah. If you could just, I thought it'd be fun to just give everybody a little background, because you come from the life of academia, you're a professor, and now this is your work is quilt making. And how did you sort of find that and move over?
Entirely on a whim. I left academia due to illness, and it took a long time to figure out what it was and eventually recover and find a management program. And as I was recovering and finally able to move again, not be paralyzed, on a whim, I asked my mother to bring the sewing machine that we had down from the attic because I wanted to make my daughter a dress.
Ah.
She was just about to turn two, at which point we found all the dresses were becoming Disney dresses or some branded thing. And I just wanted to make her a plain dress. And it was a horrible dress. My mother gave me a one-hour quick lesson, sew some straight lines on a piece of paper to show that you can do it. Okay, go sew.
Yeah.
But she loved it. And in the next 2 weeks, I made her about 10 more dresses, playing with applique.
Yeah.
All the same A-line, because I know nothing.
Yeah.
And then I realized, but I don't like any of this fabric.
Yeah.
I can design this. I'm a design professor.
Yeah.
So I tried designing fabric, which led me to Andover. Mm-hmm. Ended up getting a contract to license with Andover, at which moment I said, I'm designing quilting fabric. I should probably make, a quilt.
Yeah.
And I made one and fell in love.
Yeah.
And not so much, not just with the practice and the process, but even just immediately my daughter's response, and she's responsible for so much of, you made that?
Uh-huh.
And she, and actually the thing that hooked me is she asked to run to me. She ran to me and said, give me a quilt hug.
Aww.
And that just connected me to then the larger tradition and conceptual history of quilts as a type of home.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the Mennonite traditions of having a certain number of quilts before you can get married as the foundation for a home, which was then the start of one of the quilts in the book, the cinder blocks quilt, using the foundation material for modern homes, tying into quilts as a foundation for home. And so really Matilda pushed me into it, but it was then the academic in me was hooked on what quilts mean.
So there were no quilts in your family then?
No, there are no quilters, at least as far back as my great-grandmother. There were knitters and crocheters and embroidery and sewing, but no quilters.
Did you do, your background is in design, did you make physical things, or was more like the drawings that was your creative outlet?
Well, as a child, I was a math geek. I have math trophies. I was terrible at art. I got into art seriously about my senior year in high school because I was pretty much out of math. And I took double art, luckily with an amazing sculpture teacher. We had a sculpture teacher where I went to school, and she was the first woman to get an MFA from the University of Michigan. And I was in double art, which meant I was essentially enrolling in honors art.
Yeah.
But before that, I'd never gotten better than a C.
Yeah.
I can't draw stick figures, need trips to the stick hospital to this day. But she really pushed me. Of half of my practice was I had to develop two impossible pieces of art every week and describe them, write them as proposals, pushing me to see sort of making as more than just the object. And that hooked me. But to a degree, my entrance into art was a matter of spite.
Yeah.
And then I became hooked to it. This is a way to speak through visual form instead of through an essay.
Now, your book, is called Modern Quilt Perspective. It has 12 quilts from 12 patterns for meaningful quilts. And you are a writer. You blog about super interesting things. You know, people should check that out at Thomas Knauer Sews, because you are always writing really nice content and thoughtful things, and your work is very meaningful. So when you decided to write a book, how did you approach what you would put in it? What stories did you want to tell?
Well, the first basis of the quilt was that I wanted to do a, or of the book, was mm-hmm. that I wanted to do a book that transcended style. Mm-hmm. That was the first requirement, that it wasn't going to be modern looking necessarily. Mm-hmm. There would be a range of styles. And the reason for that decision was both to, well, one, to show that modern is much bigger than a certain moment, a certain aesthetic, mm-hmm. but also that it would free me up to then be able to follow the idea. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to look like each other in any way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I just spent a lot of time sitting and writing. I listen to NPR, I read the newspapers, and issues and ideas pop out at me. There's mm-hmm. one that's a piece on domestic violence, and that came from a story on just hearing the domestic violence stat of 1,600 people are killed every year in America mm-hmm. on average in domestic violence incidents. Just at a certain moment, quickly, 1,600, it clicked as, well, that's 40 by 40, mm-hmm. or 80 by 20, which is the way I did it, mm-hmm. Which then that math geek in me,
right.
quickly it turned into, oh, but I could quilt. Yeah. Block layout that, and mm-hmm. I then started pursuing ideas of how I might translate that. Mm-hmm. There are moments of, you know, I was sitting as, you know, the one quilt in the book, Mitosis, is a baby quilt based on our second child. We wanted to have a second child, but having been diagnosed with a genetic neuromuscular disorder, yeah. I didn't want to risk passing that gene, so we used a donor. And as you're going through round of IUI after IUI, you become obsessed with the simple idea of those two cells just need to become four,
yeah.
which need to become eight.
Yeah.
And again, that mathematical pattern resonated mm-hmm. with me into I could make a quilt out of that. So yeah. making a baby quilt that's aesthetically based on mm-hmm. the geometric progression of cellular mm-hmm. mitosis.
I think that's fascinating how your brain works, how you take and you see something, read it, and it turn, the numbers start
right.
really triggering your aesthetic.
Right. It's the content, it's the story, it's the experiences of mm-hmm. sometimes big issues of mm-hmm. domestic violence or consumerism in America. Other times, my favorite quilt in the book is the one that isn't really in the book. Mm-hmm. It's in the afterword. Mm-hmm. And it's, to me, still the best quilt I have ever done. And it's called URNH. And it's just intertessellated H's. But my daughter and I were walking down the street, mm-hmm. going to our local coffee shop, holding hands. And she's three at that moment. And she just stops us and points at our shadow. It says, Papa, we are an H.
Oh.
Not we make an H. We are that H. And so I came home, figured out how to intertessellate with no yeah. bonus squares to yeah. fill in gaps yeah. and make the quilt. And she sees it and says, Papa, that quilt is us. So she's really, and it's not a silly slip of language. That
right.
was, she was getting yeah. the symbolic relation of yeah. quilt blocks and quilt elements, mm-hmm. which in many ways I feel like I'm an ultimately traditional quilter going back to the 19th century. Mm-hmm. Quilt blocks are yeah. symbolic translations of religious experience and the pioneer experience.
Right, family, what they were living at that time.
So I'm not, so in the book is largely about transcending the aesthetic practice mm-hmm. that I think is a modern notion mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and referencing back to the historical
Neat.
Practice, in many ways, a more postmodern
yeah.
approach, which is so much of what postmodernism is
yeah.
transcending that narrow aesthetic of the modern practice to a wider global understanding, often referencing back to pre-modern
yeah.
practices.
And you have really lovely write-ups then to go with all these. So there's always something that, you know, when somebody looks at it, it's like, oh, it's a cool, and I like the layout and everything. But then you can read the story behind
it. In so many ways, the quilts are there as exemplars for the ideas. Mm-hmm.
And you told me, like, you were so happy that your publisher, F&W, just let you write your stories.
It was absolutely wonderful experience to just have them trust. I mean, the final book proposal, I had still only designed maybe half of them. Mm-hmm. They just had faith that the words and the quilts would come together. And it was they were an amazing publisher to work with, and I hope to keep working with them again and again and again, because I do think this rising and growing audience of quilters are really interested in, are really doing this, because there's a why behind it. It's not just to make another pretty thing, because they can buy lots of pretty things anywhere. And it's not just to physically do. There are a million hobbies out there available. It's because quilts resonate and mean in ways that no other object does. The history, the backstory, our American associations especially with the quilt and the heritage of it through the frontier experience is
it's
an extraordinary object of why when you I think we've all shared this experience. You give someone a baby quilt, and they immediately ask, like, "I'm going." They'll say, "Like, oh, I'm going to hang this right up in their room."
Right.
Or, "Okay, so how should I specially care for it?"
Yeah.
And it's like, and one of Matilda's godmother's mother gave Matilda us a baby quilt when Matilda was born, and we asked that question: "How should we take care of it?" And she said, "When she throws up on it, wash it, then throw it in the dryer." And that has stuck with me. I had a quilt in QuiltCon, and I loved the juror comment. This would have done better if it weren't for the grass stains on the back, because it had been part of a photo shoot for Gen Q, in which Matilda and I just ran around with the photographer and used it as home base for a game of tag, and she would just dive to get away from me, hit the quilt, and skid across the grass 6 feet. And I love those grass stains. They're the best grass stains in the world.
Well, Thomas, this has been just a lot of fun to just get a peek into how you think about your quilt making and how your process works. It's been extraordinary.
It's been great talking to you.
Yeah. Tell everybody your website again.
It's thomasknauersews.com.
Spelled the
K-N-A. UER, and it sews, I can say here, everyone's going to know that one versus out in the world. They're confused.
Yes. And they can get all the links to your things, find your book.
Find my upcoming teaching events and how to contact me if anybody wants to schedule anything.
That's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a little break from American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.